FunFactory.com has partnered with Locker Room Talk and Shots. So when you use my special code SELS20, you get 20% off your Fun Factory purchase. Just head to us.funfactory.com and use my code SELS20 at checkout for 20% off sex toys, lube, massage oils, and more. Cheers.
Do the sex.
Hi, this is Annette Benedetti, your hostess for Locker Room Talk and Shots, the podcast that likes to think of itself as the queer NPR of raunchy women's sex talk. You are about to sit in on the kind of conversations women have on their girls' nights out or behind closed doors while enjoying delicious drinks and dishing about sex. Think fun, honest, and feminist as fuck, and always with the goal of fighting the patriarchy one orgasm at a time. Welcome to the locker room. Ring loop.
Today's locker room talk and shots topic is relationship attachment style 101, your locker room guide to anxious, avoidant, and secure love. Listeners, it's been quite a year, and I've shared a little bit with y'all about my relationship journey this year and, well, throughout my life. And if you are on TikTok or online anywhere, I'm sure you've been hearing all about attachment styles in relationships. I'm talking about anxious attachment styles, avoidant attachment styles, secure attachment styles, and how they are leading to your troubles, your woes, and finding your true love or being with who you believe to be your true love. Now, there's a lot to unpack here for people to use this new information that's out on the internet in a way that can be useful to them in finding or maintaining the relationships they care about. I know that most of us have relationship goals and want to find ourselves in healthy relationships. So I thought now was a great time to dive into attachment styles in relationships, where we will be having hopefully amazing sex with people we love. And so I sought out a professional to help us all understand more about our attachment style, the attachment style of the people we're dating, maybe talk about our relationship patterns that keep us in places either we don't want to be or are standing in the way of us achieving the kind of relationships we hope for in the upcoming years. And my guest today is licensed professional counselor, Andrea Aragon. She has been on my podcast in the past, and she is going to guide us through the different attachment styles and help us understand them, how they show up in relationships, and what we can do about ours in order to maybe heal some of the wounds that have led to our particular style, if we have one that's not secure, and start having the kind of relationships we want to in 2024. Andrea, can you reintroduce yourself to my listeners and tell them a little bit about your background?
My name is Andrea Aragon, and I am a counselor. I have an LPC, and I have been in the field for, I realized recently, about 20 years. Attachment theory has actually been around since the 50s. It's come a long way, just even in recent years, I would say. And it's becoming more and more popularly talked about.
And you work with people in relationships and couples. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I'd say a relationship problem is the number one reason people come into counseling. I mean, it's usually, whether it's individually or as a couple or in a family, and it's not always romantic. You know, some people are there because they're having problems with their child or their problems at work are relationship focused. I mean, it really all boils down to relationships.
And once we dive into this topic, friends, what you're going to find out is your attachment style, while it's definitely affecting your ability to find that true love, that partner, that next awesome fuck that you want to have. These relationship attachment styles also play out in your relationships at work, in your friendships, in your familial connections. So the information you get here today is going to help you in all areas of your life. Now, I want to encourage you to stay to the end, where we're going to sum up and give you takeaways that are basically going to help you identify your attachment style, and then know what you can do about it and with it in order to manifest the connections and relationships and happiness and joy that you want in the upcoming year. Even more importantly, scroll down. You are going to see a link to my e-newsletter because I will be delivering information just like this straight to your inbox if you sign up for that e-newsletter. So make sure that you do that. Andrea, I am so ready to dive into the attachment styles and relationships and how to fucking fix whatever's been going on in my life. So let's raise our glasses. We are having coffee, Starbucks. Cheers. Let's talk about relationships. Look, relationships and sex go hand in hand, folks. And in order to have really good sex, it really helps to have really good relationships. And so we're going to dive into the attachment styles. First of all, let's just, for people who've heard about attachment styles, but they're like, I don't really understand what they are. Andrea, can you like define what are these relationship attachment styles?
Well, they stem from a theory. So there is attachment theory. It provides a psychological framework that helps us understand how we form bonds with other people. And they tend to develop in childhood. I think that's an important thing to acknowledge. And they are based on the quality of the interactions that we have with our caregivers. And there are four basic attachment styles that are identified. And they are secure, avoidant, anxious, and disorganized. So those are the four basic categories.
You are likely one of the four. Is that right, Andrea? Or can you be more than one of the four?
Okay, yes. I think this is not set in stone. I think that we all probably can fit into one of these categories. You know, if you do an exploration, you will find you are mostly one, or you may have a leaning towards one, or you might identify, you know, I used to be like this, but now I feel differently. I think that depending on the relationship you're in, you might start to feel or exhibit behaviors in one category in response to the partner that you have. That I feel has happened to me. I don't think this is something that is immobile. You can be in any of them. You know, or you can go back and a forth or around the options that are there. People tend to find they have a pattern, though. People tend to identify that they tend to repeat over and over again, more consistently even, one of the attachment styles.
All right. I would like to define each of the four attachment styles and sort of the traits of each of the styles. And let's start with secure, because my understanding is like secure attachment style is what we're all striving for or hope to be. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah. And in the original theory, that I think that is very much the case. I think that there is a lot out there where there's a lot of people working to help people who can't just shift right away, have more success in relationships they're already in with people who might be anything but secure, and how to help them get to secure or understand your partner better as they are anxious or avoidant. There is a lot of that out there. I think it's fair to say, though, that secure is the goal. We want to strive towards having secure attachments. That's where our healthiest relationships are going to happen.
Right. Okay. So let's define secure and talk about the key traits of the secure attachment style.
Well, I think it starts with, I mean, your individual self being, you know, secure with yourself. You have confidence. You are good at communicating. You are well regulated within your emotional expression. Trusting is something that is associated with a secure attachment style.
Mm-hmm. And so the secure attachment style stems from having secure attachments in your youth, feeling safe with your primary caregivers. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And having your needs met. Mm-hmm. So people who had secure attachments with primary caregivers in their childhood most often end up with a secure attachment style.
Yes.
And so that's sort of what we're striving to be in relationship, correct? Having our own ability to emotionally regulate, to problem solve with our partners, not have extreme reactions to issues that arise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it did start with studying, you know, children as they attach to their caregivers and watching them and the way that they behaved in response to their caregivers, as they were left and reunited with them. And, it is a part of the childhood development process, is learning how to attach and trust and feel safe and secure within those attachments.
Right. So let's move on to anxious attachment. Let's just head right into it. My specialty. What is anxious attachment? Let's start with kind of where it stems from.
People with anxious attachment have dealt with abandonment and loss in their life, and fearing loss of someone that they are attached to is something that follows them into their relationships, or they may have just never even been allowed to securely attach in the first place. That can happen if they were neglected, not paid attention to. This is, you know, one of the responses to surviving a situation like that, is you kind of attach with fear.
Yeah, I think that I do identify as having anxious attachment in relationships, although to what degree that comes out definitely depends on who I'm in relationship with. Something that really resonates for me is the fear of abandonment, the constantly reading my partner's emotions, reactions, being hypersensitive to their mood changes, in some ways have feeling almost at the mercy of my partner's moods, emotional ups and downs, how they present themselves.
Attachment is scary. I mean, if we fall in love, it's scary. And anxiety has a purpose. And so there's a lot of normalness or normalcy to having anxiety in relationships. You know, if your partner is clearly having an issue and they're not talking to you about it, then that's going to be anxiety provoking. And that is a normal response. And if this goes on extensively, and then that's going to aggravate the anxiety. If you're feeling anxious around somebody, that might be a sign that they are not communicating effectively. It may not just be, well, I'm just an anxious attachment person, and so it's all my problem. Yeah. You know, there are many ways. I mean, knowing that you're anxious and how bad it is, and can you talk about it? Or does trying to talk about it result in arguments or just things getting worse?
In relationships, I think, with other partners, especially if I'm in a relationship with someone who's avoidant, we'll get to those hallmarks. As an anxious attachment person, like, you're constantly reaching for the person and trying to pull them closer, trying to fix things, you cling to the relationship. You cling to trying to make it work. And that leads into another hallmark of anxious attachment, which is being a people pleaser, trying to people please, overextending, breaking your own boundaries to meet someone else's needs. So, which also brings me to another hallmark, which is poor boundaries, meaning you have the boundaries, but in an effort to keep the person you're in love with or someone you care about happy and from leaving you, you're willing to, I like to call it self-abandon, in order to meet their needs.
Yeah.
And of course, the result of that is that then you break trust with yourself.
Well, and we see this a lot in relationships where we feel like we're responsible for another person's emotional processing. This happens so, so much. And, you know, there's this extreme to it, which is like, well, no, another person's feelings are not my responsibility. And that's true. Now, there is a cause and effect in relationships always in play. But it's up to another person to manage their own feelings. So you've got that scenario again where it's like, oh, I can tell my partner is angry and upset with me, but they're not talking to me about it. I asked about it. They said nothing. At that point, you know, you have to let them work it out and completely kind of divorce yourself from needing to help them process and then communicate whatever it is that is going on with them.
Yeah. And I think as an anxious attachment person, it's really hard to do that. It's hard to be like, okay, I've asked, I've done my work. They're not responding. So I'm just going to go take care of me and do my thing until either they do respond or I hit a breaking point. I'm like, I'm done. Like, I've tried to fix whatever's going on and it's not happening. You aren't responding. So I need to walk away from this. What an anxious attachment person will do is they will just keep trying and keep trying and change tactics and give more and put more energy in and hold on harder instead of saying, no, here are my boundaries. Here are my needs. You're breaking my boundaries, or I'm breaking my own boundaries to meet your needs, and you're not meeting my needs. And so this is not a working situation for me. So if you are someone who has experienced that, then, and this resonates for you, you may have an anxious attachment style. Now, if you want to juxtapose that to the secure attachment style, a person who has a secure attachment style will hold their own boundaries, will insist on their own needs being met, and be able to let go of trying to get someone to respond to them and self-soothe their way through that.
Yeah, it is letting go. And I mean, you illustrated, it sounds so harsh. We're also taught like, well, no, you're supposed to try. You're supposed to, you know, go out of your way to try to help, you know, go the extra mile. There's a lot out there, you know, the whole for better or for worse thing. And, you know, people who really care about you will try to break down your walls. You know, a lot of that is not good boundaries. It's like, no, if you've got an issue, you need to say so. And it might be hard. And good communication is, yeah, but I'm not ready to talk about it, even is better than pretending nothing is wrong or acting like something's wrong and then saying everything is fine. Mm-hmm. And watching your partner clearly see that there's something going on. Maybe you're even noticing they have anxiety about whatever is not being talked about. The secure person will say, you know what? Okay. You say it's nothing. I'm trusting you. There's the trusting. I'm trusting you that it's nothing because you said it's nothing. So I'm going to go take care of myself right now because I'm not feeling comfortable and my feelings are mine to take care of. They're not for you to fix. So there is the secure attachment response to someone withholding and avoiding addressing something that might be going on.
Right. Well, and so maybe another good example for us, we talked about this before we recorded, is how does, since we've just given you an example of how a secure person reacts to avoidant, and we'll get to it, but how does a secure person react to someone who's anxious? And so another common hallmark of an anxious attachment person is looking for constant reassurance. One way in which I do that, and oftentimes I do it without even knowing, like I won't even know that I'm needing reassurance, but my partner will bring it up. And one of the things I do is I'll say, I love you, repeatedly and often, looking to hear it back for that just reassurance that everything's okay. So how would a secure person noticing that their partner who is anxiously attached respond to someone like, it's been an hour and I've said, I love you, like, I don't know, 5-10 times. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I had an anxious partner, before, and I would see that as a bid for connection. that is not going away after five I love yous in a short period of time. So it's time to stop everything and care about your partner's feelings and create awareness. It's like, okay, I would just drop everything and make eye contact with my partner, probably physically show some affection and say, hey, babe, I love you too. And, you know, are you okay today? What's going on? Because it feels like maybe you're needing more than you're getting from me this morning or whatever time of day it might be. It's not about me. If they are really, I mean, it might be a little bit about the relationship if they are needing something from me, but this is what being in a relationship is.
Right. Stopping, acknowledging what's going on and asking, like, what can I do?
Yeah. And don't take it personally. The secure person knows this isn't a criticism of me if my partner needs something of me. The secure person is, observant, communicative, calm, regulated, and open to hearing whatever is going on with the person that is bidding for connection with them.
Doesn't that sound lovely to all my anxious people out there? Like, I don't know, like right now, you know how during different times of year, different archetypes of people will be considered hot. Like sometimes it's the, I don't know, can you think of an archetype of, you know, everybody was in on TikTok was into white boy winter, which I didn't get at all. I'm like, for me, I think secure attachment folks right now, they are like top tier. We should be fighting for those motherfuckers out there. Like, those are the people I want to be dating. That sounds so lovely. All right. Let's move on to avoidance. The avoidant attachment style, which is very different than anxious. Where does avoidant attachment style stem from?
Well, again, I mean, it all stems from the same place. What happened to us and our primary caregivers when we were young, and how long of a duration did those problems happen? If there were problems, neglect, it can, it's the same origin, really. And it's just a different response to surviving that. The avoidant decides, well, rather than attach fearfully, I'm just going to not attach. I'm going to try not to attach. That feels like the safer place to be. And avoidance will then withdraw. I mean, that's kind of the first thing they do. And, they become emotionally unavailable. And they, because of this, because they never do the connecting, they struggle to empathize. They struggle to know what they feel. They're compartmentalized and disconnected from that. They struggle with intimacy. They struggle with it a lot.
We'll be right back. My code SELS20 is your key to kicking off the sexiest new year ever had when you use it at funfactory.com. Enjoy 20% off Fun Factory's luxury products, including vibrators, cock rings, lube, and more when you use my code SELS20. Check out the Vim vibrating wand. Yes, the one featured on this podcast thumbnail. Grab the nose vibrating cock ring and experience more simultaneous orgasms in 2024. And don't forget to check out their rabbit style vibes. I'm talking about the Lady Bi for toe curling blended O's all year long. Just fill your cart and use code SELS20 at checkout and enjoy 20% off when you shop funfactory.com. Cheers. Well, and from my personal experience over and over and over again, because I've been really into avoidance most of my life, when someone reaches for them, they're more likely to pull away. When someone tries to be intimate, intimacy almost like pushes them away. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, in a way, we're kind of recreating what feels familiar. So it makes sense if you developed an anxious attachment style in childhood because your caregivers were withdrawn, that's what's going to feel most familiar to you. So you're going to be drawn to the avoidant. Mm-hmm. later in life.
It's not uncommon for anxious people to be drawn to avoidant folks.
No. Or, it's the same theory. It's like, oh, who did you grow up to marry? Was it your mom or your dad? And it's like, well, if dad was avoidant and mom was anxious themselves, then, it really could be either one. But if both parents were avoidant, chances are you're not going to be as drawn to another anxious, and none of this is for sure. Everyone's different. We all have different journeys. And sometimes we find ourselves in a really healthy relationship, despite the mistakes our parents made, and it changes us. Suddenly we do develop secure attachment through that.
Right.
And then, it's not a recurring problem, but, it is one way to explain a recurring pattern.
Right.
To say, well, I know I'm anxious, or I know I'm avoidant, and I tend to be attracted to the opposite of that, or sometimes they are attracted to a secure person, that can happen.
Right. Well, so can we go back to the avoidant attachment style? I'd like to dig into the avoidant attachment style and how they look in relationships, because obviously they crave connection, right? And they'll pursue connection, but it's once they get connection and intimacy where things seem to fall apart. Is that right?
Sometimes. If you've never had it, you don't know it. And so you're just kind of spinning your wheels. It's different. Some avoidants do experience connection and will attach, and then they might freak out for a number of different reasons and pull away. Some never get there because they're so busy avoiding it constantly that they never actually experience the connection. And sometimes it's hard to tell what's happening with an avoidant. Like, you think they're attaching to you. And then, I don't know, maybe it turns out they didn't, or maybe they did and then they got scared. And it's hard to say. Everyone's personal emotional processing, again, is their own to know and to communicate to people and partners. It's really important. And a lot of people are not doing that work. Like, you go on a first date with somebody and there's a lot of, tell me about yourself. What do you do for work? And how many relationships have you had? And, we're getting to know each other. And no one's like, do you know your attachment style? Do you know it?
That is now my top question. Mm-hmm. I try to suss that shit out before I even get to a first date.
That's unusual.
Oh, fuck.
People are not doing that.
No, I want to know. I am, to be transparent at this time, completely off the market doing my own self work. But it was like after my last relationship ended, there was news hit the street that I was, technically a single lady again. There was the influx of texts, and I toyed with it for a second, and it was literally the first thing. The only thing I knew coming out of that relationship was I don't want to be in this anxious, avoidant dynamic ever again, which means one of two things. Either I have to really work towards a secure attachment style myself, which I have so much confidence in myself being able to do that. But, or I need to absolutely make sure I'm not diving back into an avoidant who has not done the work to fully understand their attachment style, how that affects others in a relationship, and how to, not do that shit. And so it was literally the first question. Someone would start chatting with me and I was like, oh, is this someone I want to entertain? I brought up attachment styles. And you can fucking bet that once I am back fully on the market, it's definitely going to be something I will be looking for up front.
Yes. And when you ask for people who take this advice, when you say, do you know your attachment style? And they say, yes, it's secure.
They do.
Ask how they found out, because if they took a little online test, it's not good enough. Yeah. I know some people who clearly are not securely attached in their behavior, and they test secure. A test secure for everyone who takes it. There's an online test that you can just look up, take it. Everyone who takes it tests secure that I've known, and they are not all secure. So if it did not require a questioning and a thorough investigation of their entire life story. Like if they didn't go back to childhood and think about what were my parents like? What was childhood like? What was my first relationship like? If they didn't do a full exploration of their self and their actual history and things that have happened to them, they probably still don't know.
People will put secure on their online profiles. I know if someone's put securely attached on their online profile, it's a red flag. I think probably a better way to find out and what I have done when talking to people to find out their attachment style is we've given you some traits of anxious attachment, of avoidant attachment, of secure attachment. We'll talk a little bit about disorganized attachment in a minute, is to kind of look for, ask them about their history. I ask about the relationship history. I'll ask, oh, what happened? What led to the end of your last relationship? Or, you know, people will very freely often talk about their exes and what I can tell by the things they say about their exes. You know, if they say, oh, she was crazy. She like called me all the time. She always wanted to talk about our relationship. You know, things like that, I can start to kind of suss out like, this person sounds avoidant. You know, this person, I'll see the hallmarks. I can tell when someone is my own kind. We can sniff each other out. I feel the anxious attachments out there. I'm like, I see you. I don't know how we do together, but maybe we would just cling madly to one another for the rest of our life.
It just looks like happy codependence.
Which sounds a little fucking dreamy. So, you know, don't be afraid to reach out.
Substance use could be a sign of avoidant attachment or avoidant behavior. If there is a history, it's another thing to ask about. It's something people gloss over and normalize a lot. It's hard to know if that's really happening, but it is commonly mentioned in a number of resources as a symptom of someone who might be avoidant, to someone who is drinking or using drugs excessively or frequently. It is a way to avoid dealing with things.
And I think on top of that, what you can add to that is, so it could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be using some other form of addictive behavior that helps you avoid.
It's just feelings. One way you can avoid. I mean, there are so many ways to avoid. It's just it's an easy way to avoid. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily everyone who has an issue with substances is an avoidant person, an avoidant attachment. That's not what I'm saying, but it's just one way. So if you are looking for red flags, if you're like, I want to avoid an avoidant, then, you know, that's one thing to look for because, that's not necessarily something someone might see as problematic, but could be
a sign. I mean, could have an avoidant and an avoidant be happy together? I wonder, I bet you those relationships tend to last longer. Then they just hook up together and they live happily ever after, like pushing each other away.
I certainly do not think so. I think to avoidance, I think that does happen, but that they are not happy. To avoidance are not happy. They're not talking. There is no intimacy in that relationship. And I don't know couples who are actually happy with that. Even avoidants want intimacy. They believe they want intimacy.
In my last relationship, which I have anxious tendencies that are definitely brought out in connection with avoidance, my experience was, and I've definitely heard this spoken to a lot when it comes to avoidance attachment, is a push and pull, right? So my partner would pull me to him and then I'd like get on board and I'd be like, oh, we're going to love each other. And then it would be like pushing away. Okay, wait, I don't know if I'm ready for this. You know, it's too much. I need space. And then I'd be like, all right, well, like, fuck off then. And I'd pull away and then I'd be pulled back by this person and then I'd be put. And so I got into this like heavy push pull pattern.
That sounds more disorganized than truly avoidant. And avoidant doesn't pull or love bomb, in my opinion, unless they've got a personality disorder, in which case it's not their attachment style that's making them do that. It's something else. But a disorganized will do that. They will vacillate between those two extremes of extreme neediness and then complete pushing away. A disorganized will do both of those, go back and forth.
We'll be right back. Start the new year off with a bang. My code EXPLORES15 gets you 15% off womanizer.com's famous pleasure air tech sex toys. You know, the clit satisfying sucking sensation that guarantees explosive orgasms. Just go to womanizer.com and check out my personal favorite, the Womanizer Duo 2. Get ready for blended orgasms, or the Premium 2. Womanizer.com has something for you, whether you are seeking clitastic satisfaction, blended orgasms, or explosive G-spot experiences. Just shop womanizer.com and use my code EXPLORES15 at checkout for 15% off. That's 15% off all womanizer.com products with my code EXPLORES15 at checkout. Cheers. All right, well, let's talk about the disorganized attachment style. Well, I'm here to learn. We're all here to learn. And something I do want to say, none of these attachment styles are inherently bad. They don't make people bad people. They come from trauma. This is to inform everybody of the way people engage in relationships. And like, hopefully, we do tend to look at the other in relationships, right? We look at the other person when a relationship goes bad. And a lot of what we think and say is, it was them, they were bad, they did this, they did that. But you can do that all you want. But until you look at yourself and you understand how you're attaching to people, why you're feeling the way you are, why you have the patterns you do, you're not going to be able to find a relationship and sustain a relationship that's healthy.
Yes. And I think that the key is, like, I love what you said. It's not that these are bad people or good people or whatever. You know, really, I think the hallmark is, do you know yourself and are you trying to be the best person you can be? I mean, we're talking a little bit before we completely branch into disorganized. You know, we were talking about avoidant. I meet a lot of avoidants who are really just comfortable staying avoidant. They don't want to be secure. They would never word it that way, but it's really clear. It's like, nope, I'm just emotionally unavailable and that's where I'm going to stay. Or, you know, and there is contradiction there because they want intimacy in their life, but they're not really wanting to risk, you know, what it would take to get it.
It's not a priority. It's not a priority. Yeah. And I would agree with you. Like, I've actually heard that a lot. Some things from avoidance, and I have avoidance in my life who I love very much. I'm not going to fuck them, but I love them very much. And things that I will hear from them are like, yeah, I'm just content. Like, I don't need to be in a relationship, or if I'm in a relationship, like, I'm not going to be with someone who is high maintenance, what they call high maintenance. I have a lot to say about that, but I mean, they basically are only willing to engage in relationships where the person is willing to be good enough with whatever it is they're going to put in. That is not the priority in their life. I've heard avoidants say things like, you know, maybe I'm happy just being on my own. I'm happy being a loner. Like, that's maybe how I work best. That's what I'm going to do. I heard an avoidant say, well, you know, I don't really have a sex drive anymore anyways, so I'm fine not being in a relationship anymore. So,
if you're not trying to be in relationships, I think that that's perfectly valid and fine.
As long as it doesn't affect your other relationships, because your attachment style will play out in your work relationships, your familial relationships, and your friendships.
I suppose, depending though on the quality of the relationship, you know, being avoidant, You can have friends and be avoidant, and the expectation that you be emotionally available is not going to be there. But you can do a lot of damage to a person who is signing up to be your partner if you think it's okay to just stay emotionally unavailable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is harmful.
Let's talk about the disorganized attachment person.
This is hallmarkly characterized as poor emotion regulation. So someone who, you know, seems to be really moody might be, you know, having some issues in terms of having disorganized attachment, really angry, volatile, pushing away 1 minute and then desperately needing time and attention the next, going back and forth. They tend to be very suspicious. Dissociation is something that happens a lot in this too. These are things to look for in terms of wondering if you might be attaching to someone who has a disorganized attachment style. And, you know, you talk about the origins of where this starts. When I hear all of these, when you list the disorganized attachment, it just sounds like post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, you know, so chances are there was a lot of trauma in childhood. Something probably pretty significant is resulting in a manifestation of disorganized attachment.
Interesting. And so that's how they show up in relationship. It's just like whoever's with them, regardless of like if they're with another avoidant, then they're probably going to be more anxious with them.
No, yeah. They're going to be disorganized. They're going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
With that. Because since there is a vacillation, I mean, if they're avoidant, they're avoidant. Then they're really not attaching. They're working to be detached. You're avoiding attachment if you're an avoidant. And you might still find yourself attached somehow. I'm not sure how that happens with extreme avoidance, but, you know, anxiety is a sign that you are attaching in a situation that doesn't feel safe. So that's where the anxiety is coming from. And so the disorganized is like, it starts to sound, I mean, if I think about it, like, I really want this intimacy. I really want the relationship. And I'm anxious about it. Oh, now I'm getting it and I don't feel safe and I'm going to withdraw. So they kind of go back and forth.
Do we have anything else to say about the disorganized? Anything else to say about it?
Not really. I mean, it tends to not be looked at as much as anxious and avoidant. I mean, those tend to be the two that people focus on because if you're disorganized, you're technically doing both. At different rates and in different ways. And so
might a disorganized attachment style person be mistaken for avoidant at time and then anxious at other times?
Yes.
Depending on who they're attached to.
Yeah.
And the situation.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, even the individual would be like, well, I'm feeling anxious and I'm acting anxious. And they'll just, you know, connect with the anxiety they're experiencing. And then just ignore the avoidant behaviors that they exhibit as a way to cope with the anxiety.
Right. All right. So there we are. Those are the four attachment styles. And then we've given you some of the interactions that happen between them. And so that brings us to, now you guys know what the attachment styles are. You know some of the hallmarks. We've given you examples of how they've shown up in our own personal lives. We've given you examples of how they interact with one another and then sort of falling back on like, what does a secure person do in the same situation? So now let's start with the anxious person. I'm anxious attachment style. Andrea, what would you say if I were coming to you as a client and I was like, I know that I'm anxious attachment style. You know, I've been working on my anxiety. I want to move towards being able to be more securely attached. Mm-hmm. And I want some tools to have so that regardless of who I date in my next relationship, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not repeating some of these behaviors. We'll be right back.
Kick off the new year with a jaw-dropping 30% off of some of the hottest sex toys. And my favorite, Gleam Lube, with code EXPLORERS30 when you shop thethruster.com. Known as the home of the incredible Build Your Own Thruster Prime, thethruster.com is also partnered with LaSierre.com, where you'll find gorgeous vibrating steel toys, and BoutiqueVoila.com, where you can grab a vibrating lipstick, a rubber ducky that gets lucky, or even get pounded by Thor's hammer, literally, all for 30% off with code EXPLORERS30. Just head to thethruster.com where you'll find The Thruster, La Sierre, and Boutique Voila, and enjoy 30% off your site-wide purchases with code EXPLORERS30 at checkout. Cheers.
Wow. I'd ask you, how is your self-esteem right now? How well do you know your value as a person?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel damn good about myself when I'm single.
So it sounds like, I mean, you're telling me you feel really good when you're single and you tend to be attracted to avoidants who in essence are rejecting you repeatedly over and over again.
Yeah. Then I feel bad about myself.
Which is an understandable response to rejection. So let's go to how you respond to rejection. Let's try, you know, turning away from people who reject you.
It sounds simple.
It sounds simple. It starts with, okay. I mean, in the moment, you know, you feel it.
Yeah.
You feel the anxiety go up. So did I just get rejected on some level? I mean, maybe they didn't mean to reject me, you know.
But see, that's exactly what I do. I do the, well, maybe they didn't mean it that way. Or usually, because I'll tell you what, I'm not going to lie to you. I can, in this last relationship and every relationship before that was similar, I can pinpoint the first time.
Right.
That some form of rejection or pulling away or shutting down, like the first time that flag went up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was the moment I should have stood my ground and said, this isn't acceptable in the kind of relationship I want to be in.
Yeah. And what did you say instead?
I listened to their, I stopped in this last relationship when that moment happened. I stopped and I was like, wait, you know, I physically reacted to it. And of course the person doesn't say, yeah. Like, you know, they don't lean in. Instead, they give you an explanation.
They rarely will lean in. You'll be surprised. Sometimes they will be like, oh, whoa, I didn't mean to do what I obviously just did, which was completely alienate you from me. That is the last thing I want. So everything stop. There are people who will do that.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's kind of the reaction I did get was like a sort of like, oh, I didn't mean it that way. I'm acting weird, you know. And then I was like, oh, they really, you know, the minute they gave me a thread of like, well, I wasn't really rejecting you, or that's not what I meant, or of an excuse, I grabbed onto that thread and I kept going, mm-hmm. right? Which then, of course, led to the next time. And the next time, and then a pattern of like this rejection and then an excuse that would bring me back into the situation instead of just like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, you know, my self-esteem would then get built back up a little bit and then it would get knocked back down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And instead of just saying, you know, like I'm worth more than this, clearly you don't see my worth. So I'm going to like move along until I find somebody who does. I just, you know, I'm a driven bitch, man. Like, I'm like, God damn it.
Set your sights on something.
I can make this motherfucker work. God. And I'm like, I think of that as, in fact, one of the traits in myself that gives me good self-esteem is like, I will like work on something and stay the course longer than most people. And it's how I have achieved a lot of the things I've achieved. This might be a situation that it's not actually helping me mm-hmm. in, right? I think the self-esteem thing with anxious attachment is confusing to me a little bit. Because I feel like in the anxious, at least for me,
I mean, maybe a lot of people with anxious attachment style would be like, oh no, like I do have low self-esteem. But I feel like the way that it shows up for me and how I know, and maybe it's not low self-esteem in that I don't feel like I'm a worthy person overtly, or I don't see, like, I think I'm a fucking catch. I really do in so many ways. But what I do realize is where it must be is like, I feel like people will leave me or won't love me back the way that I want to be loved. And so I do this overextending. I do this overgiving. I do this overcompromising, you know, mm-hmm. Like a relationship's a contract. When I start a relationship, it's a contract. We're like, I'm really good about setting up expectations. And what I find in relationships happens is then the contract on my end starts to end up having to shift their direction to make things work. And I will shift and I will shift until one day I'm like, where the fuck am I? Like, I'm standing all the way over on their side of the contract, mm-hmm. Which is not where I intended to be. And okay. So I think that's how that low self-esteem shows up. Because if I had high self-esteem, I'd say, no, this was the contract. This is what we agreed to. And if you love me like you say you do, then you're going to honor my needs as well. You know, my needs are going to be as important as your needs. And I don't do that. I mean, in relationships, I have so often said the most common thing I've said in my past relationships has been outwardly, you're not meeting my needs. I feel lonely. I feel sad. I'm unhappy. And I've been met with silence. Mm-hmm. Or in one case, the person actually said, well, it hurts my feelings that you don't feel fulfilled by our relationship.
That's an avoidant response. Because it's all about them as a failure right then. They're failing you.
Yeah.
It's not about your emotions that you wanted to talk about. It's now about how they are failures. It's a common avoidant
thing
to say. I mean, and they are feeling that pain.
Sure.
You know, they do feel like failures.
Back to
what to do.
What to do.
To help yourself. And I hear what you're saying, and that it's a lot harder to practice. And through experience, we learn our limits. And what signs, when was it that we really should have walked out? There is something to be said about, you know, people being allowed to make mistakes. Miscommunications do happen. None of us are perfect. Giving our partners the compassion and understanding that we want to receive, because eventually we make mistakes too. And we have bad days.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when do you know? When is it too much? When has it happened too many times? When was it? Sometimes people know, oh, it was the first time I should have left. It was that big of a transgression. Other times it was, you know, maybe a year of, you know, events that happened. And it's like, yeah, this is not repairable. You know, I wish I could tell you, yeah, just be intolerant, but that's obviously not the best way to be. That can be an avoidant thing to do in itself.
Well, I think the thing that has been helpful for me and that I think is useful probably for all the attachment styles, but definitely anxious attachment style, is self-reflection.
I think that for me, I mean, and it for everyone, then you say, you know, what do I want for myself in terms of feeling safe and secure and not criticized, abandoned, rejected, all the things. I want to be feeling good and safe and wanted and loved and cared for 95% of the time.
Hell fucking yeah.
You know, where I mean, and really, I'd rather 100, but I get that I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. You're going to have fights. There are going to be bad days. You're not always going to feel great, and it may not even always be their fault. So, but we're talking way most of the time. Mm-hmm. This feels good. Mm-hmm. That is what you want. So if you are feeling like, well, half the time it's okay, it's not good enough.
Mm-mm. No. Well, I think that has also been something I think that it will be helpful for anxious attachment style people. First of all, go to therapy. Yeah. Like, I am in like deep, like, trauma therapy right now, to heal my core wounds. But I also know that until I do that work, I will not be able to move forward in a way that I feel 100% confident is healthy. And I will tell you this much, the focus therapy that I've been doing for the past, I think, 3 to 4 months now has made a world of difference. I mean, a world of difference in my healing process now. So first, I think you need therapy. Learning how to self-soothe and deal with anxiety when it arises, so that the first time you feel it in reaction to your partner, you can take a moment with yourself and soothe yourself. And then it's hard to think critically and logically when you're up in anxiety head, mm-hmm. right? Things seem bigger than they really are. So if you can self-soothe for a moment, then you can look at things clearly mm-hmm. and decide, like, all right, was that too much for me to keep moving forward with this person? Mm-hmm. And like, you can trust yourself, right? Mm-hmm. If I can soothe myself, I can trust myself. Mm-hmm. And the more I trust myself, the more I move towards feeling secure. Ultimately, I'm working on a secure relationship with myself, right?
Right.
Because then if, regardless of who I'm with, if they leave, it doesn't matter. I'm already in a secure relationship.
Exactly.
You know? And I think that a lot of anxiety comes from feeling like there's no safe space. There's no safe space. There's no safe place to go. There's no safe person to turn to. And the more I feel like, yeah, I can turn to myself, the less anxious I feel, mm-hmm. generally speaking, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like for anxious people, creating a secure relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
And trusting yourself, because it's hard to really know who you're in a relationship with. And oftentimes we've talked about this, when you're in relationship with someone who's avoidant or disorganized or who knows, a narcissist or whoever, somebody who's toxic or wounded in their own way, one of the first things they do is try and break your trust with yourself, like tell you what you're doing is crazy. I think especially women will relate to this. We get called crazy all the time mm-hmm. for, you know, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what our intuition is telling us. And I will tell you something, my intuition has actually been correct 95% of the time, which is more than I've felt secure in any of my relationships. So yeah, I mean, like, you have to be able to trust yourself so that when your partner starts calling you crazy, you can be like, well, fuck you. Like, mm-hmm. don't fuck with my relationship with myself. It's telling me you're not doing what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's my thought.
Yeah. It sounds like you are already doing the therapy work.
Therapy.
That's going to help you.
Yeah. Reflection, self-reflection. Reflecting on my relationships, identifying my patterns in relationship, in reaction to other people, and then therapy, and using my tools, all of the tools I have to regulate my own emotions. Because isn't that ultimately, like, becoming a secure attachment person is being able to regulate your own emotions?
Well, yes, secure attachment is regulated. You know, there are some avoidants who are very regulated. Disorganized tend to not be regulated at all. And like I said, even I get really anxious, but I'm so well regulated, you may not know. So regulation has to kind of do with, how do you manage your emotions? You know, how do you deal with them? Is it in a healthy way? Yes. Regulation, working on your regulation skills, if you see any need to, is a definite must if you want to be in relationships of any kind.
Right. Also, another thing that I think is helpful for anxious attachment people is building up a community of people, whether it's two people one person, your family, that you have secure attachments with.
Yes.
I have a small circle of people in my life that I have very secure attachments with. And I can turn to them for support, for input.
Create your family.
Yes.
The people you can always turn to, no matter what.
Yes. Yes. All right. Avoidant people.
Yes. The therapy for avoidant people is about empathy, learning to empathize, get in touch with your emotions, care about other people's emotions. And that is where to start. That is the cornerstone of I think what an avoidant would need to be working on.
Right. So therapy.
Again, therapy with a different focus, like with the anxious attached self-esteem, knowing your value, creating a good support network for yourself are all going to help you. You know, the avoidant is like, you know, exercise the empathy muscle, compassion, understanding, learning how to know what you're feeling and not let it direct you. But being able to be like, okay, I have my feelings and I can, you know, acknowledge them, know what they are, and not let them get in the way of exploring what another person is feeling. You know, not make it all about my feelings, but it's a lot of emotional work, learning how to feel your emotions, manage them, and care about other people's experiences without taking it personally.
Right. What about the piece about avoidance, like really pushing people away and not, or, you know, not being able to attach to people?
Well, that is how they avoid is, you know, they're emotionally disconnected. And they are, you know, they struggle to empathize, I think, with what another person is feeling. And so, yeah, you have that conversation of like, you know, I'm really feeling stressed right now. And they're like, well, I'm really hurt that you are feeling the way you are about me and us, you know, and that's not going deep. That's not really caring about your emotional process and being curious about it. And wanting to know if and how I contributed to it. I mean, you're not like some, you know, evil villain if maybe you did or said something that hurt another person's feelings. You know, you have the ability to know that and curve that. You know, it may not be you, but if we don't explore it,
right,
you know, then we don't know.
Right. And so something key for y'all to take away is, yes, therapy is really important for all of these attachment styles that aren't secure. But it's important to go into therapy with a focus, you know, to tell your therapist, I have this attachment style, I'm doing this in relationships, it's something I want to work with, and I want to learn how to attached to people. Mm-hmm. I want to learn how to stop avoiding or being anxious. And so that you know that your time with your therapist and your work with your therapist is actually directed to an outcome.
Right. And again, it keeps coming back to how can I securely attach to myself? Again, with the avoidant, that's something they would need to do, because a lot of what's going on is they don't even know themselves well enough to know, you know, and they're really hard on themselves. I think, you know, that there is a strong, I've noticed a strong, you know, sense of failing with them as they move through, you know, life and relationships. It's hard for them to look at their own errors and mistakes and not destroy themselves, like give themselves that unconditional love and acceptance that they are needing to give to their loved ones is kind of like how I see it working with the avoidant, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They're really hard on themselves and they're not very good at giving even themselves an allowance to be human So it's really hard for them to do that to other people.
Let's talk about this, the disorganized attachment style person, because nobody ever really talks about them.
Because you can divide this into working on the avoidant behaviors versus the anxious behaviors. When we look at it, like I said, you know, this looks like PTSD. you know, so yeah, therapy where you address your traumas. And you work on emotion regulation skills. That would be a really big focus for the disorganized.
There you go. That is your starting point. Mm-hmm. So for everybody, it's time to go to therapy. You know, and I am a big. I know you're a therapist. I'm a big believer in focused therapy, my personal belief. Like I'm not someone who goes to therapy and I do it like forever and ever, 365 days a year for multiple years. I've gone in spurts. Like there's times when I feel like, okay, I've gotten what I desired out of this. I always have a goal-oriented therapy. And then I kind of go and I work what I've learned. And then if something comes up, I go back or I find someone who's specialized in what I need. And I go into it with like, here's what I want to work on. Here's what I need, where I need to be. Mm-hmm. And so if you are someone who's not in therapy, but you are like struggling with your relationships, you're hearing about attachment styles and they are playing into your inability to achieve the kind of connections you want to, you can go to a therapist and say, hey, here's something I've learned about myself. I want to work specifically on this to achieve certain outcome, and your therapist can work with you that way, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of ways to do therapy. I think that self-driven therapy can work. I mean, when I say do the work and do the self-exploration, it isn't necessarily sitting down with one counselor in a room with a couch and all of that. You know, there are groups out there I participated in a women's group over the summer that was incredibly helpful. I just went to three women's groups. Oh, it was four women's groups, and it was profoundly enlightening for me. Really helped me get through this past year. And there's, you know, reading the books. And, we've even given a guideline in today's, you know, podcast. It's like, go back to your childhood and think about it. What were your parents like? What did they give you, not give you, that you think that you needed? How did that affect you? Do you think you had someone that you securely attached to? And it can be an older sibling or a grandparent or another extended family member. And, you know, think about how that affected you. I mean, that is self-driven reflection that is very therapeutic. And yeah, talking to a therapist, getting some feedback, someone who's got maybe has spent a lot more time reading information about these things can be very helpful.
All right. So if you want to find out more about attachment styles, your attachment style, there are a lot of books, but you can start with Attached, the New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love. It is by, and I hope I'm not saying this wrong, but Amir Levine and Rachel S.F. Heller. It might be on Audible. I am not sure, but it's a good starting point. There are a lot of resources online as well. Now, how do you find out what your attachment style is? Andrea and I were just discussing this, and I think it's a little risky to just jump online and, take a quiz and then be like, that's what my attachment style is. It maybe is a starting point, but you have some good suggestions.
Yeah, I think it goes back to doing an assessment of your childhood and what it was like and thinking about what kind of caregivers you had. You get a book and it's going to list all the different things that indicate someone might be avoidant or anxious and et cetera, et cetera. And you might say, wow, that really sounds like mom. That really sounds like dad, you know, and that might give you some resources in terms of, do I emulate them? and how did that maybe affect me? I also was suggesting or thinking like asking your exes, you know, if they think, you know, if they have any kind of working knowledge of this. Obviously, if they don't, then they may not be good resources. And even if they're completely wrong, it's still information for you to be like, well, this person thinks that I'm this way and this person thinks that I'm that way. Or all of my exes think that I have anxiety in my attachment style. And so that's something to consider and look at and assess yourself. And that's what matters the most is, do I agree? And don't be afraid to disagree, because no one knows you better than you know yourself.
Right. Is this something that a therapist could help someone discover as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, go to therapy.
Yeah. Talking to your therapist about, say, I want to know what my attachment style is. And they're going to be like, oh, fun. So yeah, I mean, yeah, they can absolutely help you with that.
Yeah. So if you really want to take time to dig into this and improve your relationships and how you enter them and how you move through them and understand yourself and your partners and your patterns, go to therapy. I mean, but also really it's helped me long before I started therapy. I really did. There's a lot of resources out there. There's a lot of reading you can do. There's a lot of self-learning that you can do that will get you a long way. And so I was able to start kind of working my attachment style a year plus ago, and, you know, it helped a lot. That's why I'm here. Anyways, I hope that this helped. There's a lot to attachment styles, and today was just wanting to use some of the information, get you started on your own journey. Hopefully what you've learned today has made you feel less alone, helped you understand yourself a little bit better, given you some peace when wondering what happened in that last relationship or the last five relationships, and given you some ideas on what to do next as you either work on the current relationship you're in or search for your next big love. Andrea, before we go, do you want to tell people where they can find you? Anything about you, looking you up?
Well, I mean, you've got my name, and I do have, I am on Psychology Today. If you looked up my website there, you could find a number and an email to reach me. And, yeah, I mean, pretty easy to find.
She's easy to find. And not only does she work with, people in relationships and, seeking this kind of guidance, she is also a therapist who works with a lot of people who are in poly and non-monogamous relationships. I actually have an article coming out that I will be sharing on non-monogamous relationships where I interviewed Andrea, so keep an eye out for that. And if you are thinking about or in non-monogamous relationships, check her out.
Yes. Yeah?
All right, guys, onward. So until next time.
Until next time. I'll
see you in the locker room. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ring loop. Bring sexy back in 2024 with hot lingerie, sensual body products, and adventurous sex toys from lovehoney.com, all at a 15% discount with code EXPLORES15. Embrace your inner bombshell with their gorgeous bra and panty sets, baby dolls, and corsets. Then explore your desires with their line of toys that range from Vanilla Is My Flavor to Tie Me Up and Call Me Good Girl Daddy. And don't forget to treat yourself to a massage candle or a sensual body oil, all for 15% off with code EXPLORES15 when you shop lovehoney.com. That's right, 15% off on lingerie, sex toys, and more when you shop lovehoney.com and use code EXPLORES15 at checkout. Cheers.